Bibles, would you turn to the book of Ruth? And if you've been with us for the last few weeks, it shouldn't take very long to catch you up. The setting is the book of Judges. The setting is the time of the Judges. What was the overarching characteristic, the overarching feature of the time of the Judges?
No king.
No king is the first half. What's the second half?
People did what they thought was right in their own eyes.
People did what they saw fit, what they thought was right in their own eyes. Okay? That's going to be the backdrop to what we're looking at today. Now, there's a disconnect for some of you in what I just said. How can we talk about the book of Ruth and have any problems of that sort? That would seem to be a reasonable question for those of you who ponder. I do want to pause before I get too far started. I've been turning the chairs around to try to keep you all to move a little closer because we don't fill all the space in here in this hour. And this morning, all of you just did that. Thank you. Keep doing it. That's good and that's helpful. Okay. Let's catch the story this far. We have worked on the book of Ruth through chapter 2, verse 13. A man and his wife and their two sons were faced with famine in Israel. They left Israel to go to, you remember where they went?
Moab,
a neighboring country, because they needed to find food. While they were there, the two sons married women from Moab. And then in succession, what happened? Daddy died, and then both of the sons died. That leaves three widows, one of whom was this woman from Israel. The other two were her daughters-in-law. And word comes to her that the famine has broken, that there's food in Israel again. She decides she'll go home. She takes her two daughters-in-law with her a little ways, and then it's almost as if something comes over her, and she says, maybe that's not a good idea. So she tells them, why don't you turn back? One of them does. Who was that? Orpha. Now, we were told last week that Oprah says that her name really is Orpha, but it got misspelled on the birth certificate or whatever. And that's a great story, and I hope it's true. Who was the other?
Ruth.
Orpah turned back. Ruth thought about it, didn't. So Naomi and Ruth come into Bethlehem, which is where they're from. And when they get there, they're worried. They have to be, using the word for this morning, they're worried about where we're going to live and what we're going to eat, how are we going to be able to survive. Yes?
Would that be normal for the in-laws, if your husband's died, for those women to have stayed with Naomi? Or was she
the implication
awesome?
Is no.
Yeah, she's so awesome.
Let's hold that thought of how awesome she is before I get through today. I'm going to take a little different tack on this than I think you've heard before. Paul says he's wondering how I'm going to deal with the threshing floor, and we're heading for that. If you have done what I ask you to do and have read this, this is interesting going in here. But there was some kind of a bond built to where Orpah turned back in tears, and Ruth came on with her, refusing to turn back at all. There's something there. Okay, and I've got to walk a tightrope because I don't want to condemn. But I do want to point out a few things along the way, and let's see what lessons we can learn from that. Okay, so she comes in, and they're hungry. Ruth offers to go and
glean.
It says in my translation, by chance she went to a particular field. By chance, the owner of that field happened to come to the field that day. The implication was he had other fields he could have been in or could have been doing work in the city. The two of them met. And under those circumstances, the prayer had been at the first, may you find favor with some man who owns fields where you can get some food. And that favor came from Boaz. And what I want to bring your attention to, this is still review from last week, start at verse 11 in chapter 2 and look at Boaz's statement to Ruth. Ruth has just said in verse 10, how have I attracted your favor for you to notice me? I who am only a foreigner. Boaz replied, I've been told all about the way you behaved to your mother-in-law since your husband's death, and how you left your own father and mother in the land where you were born to come to a people of whom you previously knew nothing. May the Lord repay you for what you have done, and may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. I've said that slowly because I want you to remember that phrase. What is Boaz's prayer for her? May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. She said, and this is where we ended last week, "My Lord, I hope you will always look on me with favor. You have comforted me. You have encouraged me, even though I'm not the equal of one of your workwomen." Now, that's where we ended last week. Now, what I would like to ask is I would like to ask permission to move quickly through the rest of the book so that we can come back and look at more detail at one particular part. Is that fair? Okay. So, what happens in verse 14? What happens is societal conventions are shattered. When it was time to eat, Boaz said to her, "Share my meal." It says, "Come eat some of this bread, dip your piece in the vinegar." Ruth sat down beside the reapers, and Boaz made a heap of roasted grain for her. He made her a meal. She ate until she was satisfied, and she still had some left over. She then got up to go back to work, and he says to the work people, and it says work people because men and women both on duty there. What does he basically say to them? Let her take from anywhere she wants. Deliberately drop some things so that she'll have more to glean. And don't you dare scold her. Verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gleaned, and it came to about a bushel of barley. How big is a bushel compared to a peck? The first hour knew more than most of you do. Okay. There's 4 pints in a, there's 2 pints in a quart. There's 4 quarts in a gallon. There's 4 pecks in a bushel, but somewhere a hug around the neck gets into it. Chuck and me and sort of lose track. But how much is a bushel? Is that a lot or a little?
A lot.
That's a lot. That's a whole lot. Okay? Now, it says that she beat out what she had gleaned. What does that mean? You separate the part that is nourishing, the part that you can eat and get some from
the chaff.
The chaff. The Bible is full of references to this agricultural picture, separating the wheat from the chaff. Sometimes talking about separating the evil that sometimes is in us from the good that is in us to make us better. Sometimes talking about separating evil people from good people. That picture is in there enough to take notice of this. What's the verb that we use for somebody who does this? What would we say they have just done? They have winnowed, or they have gone and done threshing. Okay. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. So she's done the whole thing. So what? When she takes it back, she doesn't take back. What's the parallel? This week, I tried to get out of my comfort zone at a level that is astonishing to me to this moment. I had supper over the dining hall on one night this week. And in the line, they had boiled crawfish. I've had boiled crawfish once in my life. I spent a year in Louisiana. The first weekend that I was in Louisiana, I'd gone ahead. Barbara and the kids weren't there yet. A friend of mine owned a seafood restaurant. It was dark on Monday, and they took all the leftover crawfish, brought it to his house, and the family that owned the restaurant, all the cousins and everybody else came, and they ate crawfish until they burst. And that night, I ate crawfish. I cannot remember how to eat a crawfish. But I do know this. When you finish eating a crawfish, you still have most of the crawfish left. You got the picture? There's a little bit that's good, and the rest of it is, you know, crack this, crack that, throw this away. And don't go any further with that. I know there's some things you can say at this point. But she has gotten the chaff out of the way. She has a bushel, and everything in the bushel is good. Okay? What's Naomi's reaction when she gets home? Where were you? Whose field were you in? Somebody took notice of you. Verse 19, where have you been gleaning today? Where have you been working? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Ruth told her mother-in-law in whose field she had been working. Quote, the name of the man with whom I have been working today is, and you hear Naomi, get on with it, tell me his name. And his name is?
Boaz.
And Naomi screams with joy, you can see, and says, May he be blessed by the Lord who does not withhold his faithful love from the living or the dead. This man is, and it's very important to get the words right, one translation doesn't. The word that she uses is not Goel. It is not kinsman redeemer. It is the word for a close relative, not the closest relative. What does yours say? One of our close relatives. That's a good translation. There's at least one translation out there that says kinsman redeemer, and I do not believe that's a correct translation. A close relative, okay, and among those who would have the role of kinsman redeemer. Okay, now I want to pause and make an observation. By not using the word Goel, what has Naomi revealed? That she knows he's not, and that someone else is. There's someone in first place. What did the Avis ads always say?
We try harder.
We try harder because we're number two, right? That appears to be Boaz's position. He's number two in line. He's number two in line. He's not number one. So far, okay?
Yeah. Redeemer. I understand the definition in general, but as a human being, a redeemer was another human being.
This is a picture of Christ's action for us way later. But the term, I've seen it spelled a couple of ways, G-O apostrophe E-L or G-A apostrophe A-L. I don't know which one is right. But I've always heard it G-O apostrophe E-L, Goel. And that term means a kinsman redeemer. And what it means, way back in the law, probably in Numbers or Leviticus, there's provision that if you die and you have no children, then a close relative, a brother if you can find one, would marry your widow, and the first child that you have would inherit all that you would have had, so that your name would not be lost. And the term for that role was Goel, kinsman redeemer. And what I'm pointing out to you is Naomi isn't using that term, which implies that she knows this is not the person in the first place. Okay.
A redeemer, though, just what you said sort of tickled the thought process. A redeemer is someone who has both the social power and the ethnic responsibility of lifting someone up, let's say, that has, you know, lost their husband, can redeem them or keep them going, both socially and economically.
And more. It's at least that, yeah.
Right. During that time period. And so what she's saying here, though, is that Boaz, though a relative, does not have that, or it's not first in line.
Well, yeah, not first in line. There is a responsibility that the wider family has to try to replace the line, to keep the line going. The husband is gone. Both of the two sons are gone. It's now down to Naomi and this one daughter-in-law. So somewhere, so the role would be to marry Ruth.
Do you think and, because she was a Moabite and they had left and came back and all that, for some reason that hadn't happened in this situation?
I think this was something that wasn't always observed. And I think there would be pieces to this. And let me say a couple of things I said in the first hour that I haven't said here yet. What would they have left when they went to Moab? They would have left their land. They would have left their property. They would have carried what they could carry. Okay, who has the land now? We're not told. But whoever has the land is basically caretaking. And the women can't take the land. It has to be a kinsman redeemer who does that.
But it is a family.
Well, it would be the responsibility to to do that. And remember, if you exercise that responsibility, you don't necessarily get anything out of it because the child inherits all of this. So it may be somebody who has the land says, I don't really want that to happen because that means I keep the land and continue to use it and have it produce. There's complexities in here that I don't think I want to linger here. There's another place I want to try to go. But that's what's happening here. And Naomi uses a word that implies that she knows Boaz is not in first place. But he's close.
And this is short, but just to say, it's not exactly the same, but when I read this, it is so close to at least some of the African tribes. All of this thing about someone in the family come to take over. I mean, it follows this very closely. Just to let you know, even though it's very foreign to our way of thinking, this still operates very close to this in some parts.
There are societies in sufficient number to be very noticeable where something like this still exists.
Japan.
Okay. So let's come now. I'm at the tail end of verse 20. This man Naomi added is a close relative of ours. He is one of those who has the right of redemption over us. Ruth the Moabitess then said to her mother-in-law, quote, he also said, stay with my work people until they have finished my whole harvest. How long is that going to take? At the least several days, if not a couple of weeks. Maybe not months until, unless there's another crop that comes in, you know, maybe that's there. The implication is that Boaz has more than one field. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is better for you, my daughter, to go with his work women than to go to some other field where you might be ill-treated. So she stayed with Boaz's work women and gleaned until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she went on living with her mother-in-law. Okay? Now, what follows in chapter 3 is where I want to spend my time. And what I'd like to do is summarize that with a sentence, go on and show you the rest of the book, then come back and look in more detail. So, here's the sentence I would like to say. Ruth, with the encouragement, if not the orders, of Naomi, becomes aggressive and takes the leading role in proposing to Boaz, who accepts, and they end up being married. In the process, Boaz has a meeting at the town gate with the guy who is in first place. And what does the guy say when offered the chance?
You take the chance.
He does not say that. He does not say that. You didn't read this closely, did you? He says, you bet. Great idea. And then Boaz begins to point out some of the complications that will come if he does that. And he says, oh, on second thought. At which point Boaz says, okay, you relinquish your claim. What was the symbol of the relinquishing of the claim? He threw a sandal onto the ground, and Boaz picked up the sandal and says, okay, with this I claim, and then everything's okay. And what happens then?
It's a deal.
They get married, and they have a baby, and the baby turns out to be the grandfather of David, and David is in the line of Jesus, and you see something very important looking way down into the future to some of the most important things that ever happened in and through Israel. So far, okay? Okay. Can I now come back, and we're going to spend some time in chapter 3.
Can I make one point again here before you get, because I know you're going to dive hard into that chapter 3.
But it's I'm heading for that threshing floor as quickly.
Matthew chapter 1, Ruth is only one of three women that make the genealogy from...
Remember the other two?
Tamar and Rahab, I believe.
Tamar is mentioned in this book. And mentioned in a very, very fascinating, interesting way. Bathsheba isn't, because Bathsheba is downstream, not upstream. Okay, back to chapter 3, verse 1. Her mother-in-law, just in case you've forgotten who she is, Naomi, then said, quote, daughter, is it not my duty to see you happily settled? What does yours say? Don't go further than that. Just that far. What does yours say there? Mine says, is it not my duty to see you happily settled? What does it say in place of duty?
I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for.
I must find a home. And then happily settled becomes where you will be well provided for. Rusty, you were saying?
Shall I see security?
Security for you.
Seek rest.
Rest.
Shall not seek rest.
Yeah, I don't think rest is in there. I think security.
That it may be well with you.
Okay, but I think security is in there somewhere. One translation says, it is time, doesn't ask it in the form of a question, it's a statement. It is time that I find a permanent home for you, implying that where they're living is temporary. Another one says, isn't it about time I arranged a good home for you? Now, I would like to ask a question. Barbara says that I was a little too harsh on Naomi in the first hour. I didn't mean to be, but I'd like to start out right. Is this the first time Naomi has had this thought? Is it not my duty to see you happily settled? Is this the first time she's had this thought? Please say no, and then scratch your heads a bit to remember what, when it was that she had this thought before. When did she have this thought before?
When they turned back.
Out on the road, she took her daughters-in-law with her. And it seems to be on that road, some thought came in. Okay, and she said to her daughters, I think you should go, daughters-in-law, I think you should go back. And she says, again, speaking of kinsman redeemer, am I going to, even if I had a husband today and I got pregnant today, would you wait around for that boy to grow up enough to be a husband to one of you? Speaking even then of this idea, because a brother would have been the one that would have claimed first place. But here's what she says. Verse 15. Look, she says to Ruth, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her God. Go home too. Follow your sister-in-law. Verse 9. May the Lord show you faithful love. The Lord grant that each of you may find happiness with a husband. A husband where? In Moab. Doing what? Worshipping the gods of Moab. That was her first thought. That was her first thought. You'd be better off with the gods of Moab than with the God of Israel. Don't miss that. So now we're in chapter 3. Daughter, is it not my duty to see you happily settled? Now, let's go a little further. And Boaz, the man with whose work women you were, is he not one of our close relatives? Is he not a kinsman? Tonight, he will be winnowing the barley on the threshing floor. So, take a bath. Perfume yourself. Dress yourself in your best clothes. And go down to the threshing floor. Let's take those in order. How often do people bathe in these days?
Not very.
How easy was it for poor people to find a bathtub and find enough water to take a bath? Where did she find perfume? Well, let's let all that go for just a minute, but I do want to stick with the perfume for just a second. Christmas time, you go to the mall, you walk from the interior part of the mall into a department store. What's the first thing you face? Cosmetics. And there typically are women there who are ready to spritz you with perfume. Is that right? Is that true? Okay. There is an ad running on TV these days for clear shampoo. I became convinced watching that ad that I want to buy some clear shampoo. My wife says to me, the women don't come with that shampoo. You watch the ad. You watch the ad. You see what you think. Okay? Now, not now, but 30 years ago, what would the perfume have been in? What container would it have been in for the attractive girls to spritz you? It would have been in an atomizer, which looks like a little bottle like this, and a line, I said 30 years, and a line like this, and a little rubber bulb, right? And what's it called? An atomizer. That is the worst word that's ever been coined. It does not take the perfume to atoms, because if it did, it wouldn't have any odor. The perfume has to stay. The perfume has to stay. as a molecule for this to work. Okay? It has to stay as a molecule. There is a better word for that device. And I have been proposing this and pushing this word for almost 25 years now. And this is the question. When they spritz it, it comes out as a... No, not a spray. A mist. So it should be called a mistifier.
I think we should start a club.
It is my belief that that is the purpose of perfume, is to mystify. And I think Naomi knew that. Take a bath. Surround yourself with mystifying agents. Dress in your best clothes and go. Let's keep going. Don't let him recognize you while he is still eating and
drinking.
When I go to the restaurant, my wife points out to me that the evidence that I am cheap is on display. At home, I always have iced tea or maybe some Coke or something like that. But when I'm in a restaurant, I drink ice water. Right? I drink ice water. Okay? I guarantee you he wasn't drinking ice water. No. They are celebrating the end of the harvest, right?
Yeah.
They have winnowed or threshed it. So now, listen carefully, the wealth of Boaz for this year is on this floor. So they're going to guard that. If they go and leave it unguarded, somebody might come and take part of it or all of it. So they're going to sleep right there. But they're going to have a feast to celebrate. Right? And at the end of that feast, how's he going to be feeling?
Satisfied.
Satisfied. Not yet. Not yet. Not yet. That comes later. That comes later. Stupefied. Stupefied. Satisfied, stupefied, and sleepy. Right? One translation, I think, gets it better than the other. It implies that he goes off a little bit. So the whole celebration's over here. It's like he goes to the other side of the big pile of grain and goes to sleep. Okay? Now, listen again. Don't let him recognize you while he is still eating and drinking. But when he lies down, take note of where he lies. If you find anything in your translation that needs to come in to amplify or settle on this, please speak up. Take note where he lies, and then, implied once he's asleep, go and turn back the covering at his feet and lie down there yourself. And now what's the sentence that follows? He will tell you what to do. Ruth says,
okay. I'll do it.
I'll do everything you say. Okay? We ought to send him out of the room now because it's about to get thick in here. Okay? So she went down to the threshing floor and she did everything her mother-in-law told her. I believe that's a bad or not as good translation. I believe there's a better one out there. Do you have it? There's one that says she did everything according to what her mother-in-law had commanded her. It picks up the word commanded. And it also says she did according to what she said. But maybe she didn't do everything exactly as she said. She was following the letter of what she was told. But she may not have been doing all the things Naomi expected to have her do as a consequence. Now we're going to see more of that in just a minute. What do we have so far? A satiated, drunken, or almost at the point of a drunken guy. And he lays down to sleep out his stupor. And now, here's a woman going and lying at his feet. He will tell you what to do. Verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything according to what her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking, he went off, mine says, happily. In good spirits.
His heart was merry.
And he lay down beside the pile of barley. Ruth then quietly went, turned back the covering at his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, he woke up with a shock. What does yours say?
Startled.
Startled, yours says. Anything else?
Shuddered.
Shuddered.
He was afraid.
Why was he afraid? Because there was somebody lying there at his feet. And it was a woman. How did he know it was a woman? It was pitch dark, probably.
He smelled
perfume.
Mystified.
Or at least that's my best guess. I didn't have that guess till last hour. Somebody the other night, I said, yeah, how do you know it was a woman? It's pitch dark in this perfume. I said, maybe so. Who are you? He said. And she replied, I am your servant Ruth. And now, my translation, I do not believe is as good as another translation here, but I'll read you mine. Spread the skirt of your cloak over your servant, for you have the right of redemption over me. Now, it's very important that we get another translation in here if we can. What does yours say there?
Spread the corner of your garment.
Spread the corner of your garment.
Since you are a kinsman redeemer.
And there, they use the word Goel. She uses the word Goel. It's the first time it's been used in this section. Naomi, you were about to say, Naomi, I should call on you more often. Okay. Did yours have another phrase there?
Just family redeemer.
Yeah, but I'm talking about spread the...
Oh,
Mike says spread your covering over your maid.
But spread, it's just that spread part.
Spread your wings.
Under your wing. What does yours say?
Spread your wings.
Spread your wing. Okay, listen carefully. That's the good translation.
New English translation says, I am Ruth, your servant. Marrying your servant.
Yeah, and I think that's too blunt and it doesn't catch the nuance. Spread your wing of protection over me. What was Boaz's prayer for her? May the Lord God of Israel richly reward you. May you find the refuge you seek under his wings. Her words, it is my belief that the best translation would echo that. Would you please answer the prayer that you made on my behalf? By yourself. Would you do what you prayed God would do for me? Would you be the one to be God's action here? Yes, Paul.
I was just going to ask, does anybody have the New American Standard Bible?
I think that's what
could you
is.
Just read what that one says?
That one says, what I have said, the spirit is covering over your maid, you are a flesh of
Yeah, and I think that's not as good as kinsman redeemer because she actually is using the term for the lead person.
As a footnote, it says
Okay. What was Naomi expecting to happen? I am now going to be critical for a moment. What was Naomi expecting to happen? She was expecting nature to take its course. She's put a beautiful, desirable woman. There's one translation. I think it's the Message. It doesn't have one part right because it keeps referring to marriage. But it does say, make yourself available to him. Make yourself available to him. If you stop there, I think the Message would have had it right. But it adds something about marriage, which I think goes further than what this says. What did Naomi expect to happen? She expected them to enter the act of marriage without the blessings of marriage. I believe that's what it looks like she expected. Because if she's really proposing, that's better done in the daylight when he knows who she is and when she does that in a place where honor would be easier to achieve. Not in the middle of the night in the darkness. Paul first and then Rusty.
I take a little bit different view of that. And
how dare you?
To me, Naomi knew they were in a dread situation, and they knew there was this kinsman redeemer, and that he had taken some liking for her, or he knew she was around.
So far, I agree with everything
okay.
you said.
Okay, I'm going to put it in a very general term. I think Naomi said, "Look, you gotta make yourself known to him, just like ladies today. All of us, men too, we groom, nicely to attract the other person." And I actually, when I read this, and I haven't read commentaries, you probably looked a lot more at it too. But when I saw that she went into the threshing floor, she was supposed to know exactly where Boaz lay, and that made me think there's a lot of people in there. So they're probably not gonna. She probably didn't go in there to just seduce him.
Most of the commentators try to move in that direction.
Yeah.
But here's my point. Naomi, I believe, knew Boaz was not first in line. And the evidence to me suggests she's trying to jump the line. Boaz is a much more attractive person to serve in that role. And now let me be blunt. it looks like she didn't trust God to get it there. It looked like she said, this is the outcome that needs to happen. And I'm not sure that it's going to happen if I don't take some action. So I'm going to take some action. Stay with me. Stay with me. I'm walking a tightrope here, and I'm inviting you to walk the tightrope with me. She is desperate. And in her desperation, she sees a way to assure the outcome that she thinks needs to come. I'm not sure I can criticize that. But I don't believe I can ignore the evidence either. And that makes me wonder whether she was, at that moment, in her desperation, stepping across a line of some kind.
Okay? You could be right, but let me...
I would invite you to let me go a little further and let's see what we can do, but go ahead.
I think you're right. She was desperate. And I think in chemistry terms, I would use the word catalyst. She was going to kind of speed this reaction up. She sends him down. And I've actually wondered how much, is there any cultural background, lay at his feet?
There are commentators. There are commentators who try to go there. But I think it is compelling where I stand to see that they were doing this in the dark of night rather than the light of day. Rusty, you had something to say, and then David. Let me carry it a little further and see what you think. David, Rusty, and then...
The message that's taking in, you're protecting your microcultural,
yeah, and using the word Mary as the message does earlier and here, I think goes further than what it looks like the Hebrew is saying. She, I think, is using the word Goel. And that says enough. I don't think she has to use the word marriage if she's used the word Goel. I think the implication is there. David?
Maybe showing my ignorance for not knowing what comes next and not having done my homework. Doesn't Naomi's motivation come into play if you're going to cast a negative light on her? In other words, is she going to benefit from Ruth getting together with Boaz? Is that what the implication is here?
Well, let me take you two steps. If this is reading the way I think it reads in plain view, Naomi is trying to manipulate an outcome that would get Ruth and Boaz connected. And once connected, marriage would come. I believe that if she had accomplished her goal, the redemption of the land would never have come. Because I think this would have been seen as a backdoor way to get that, and I think she would have lost that. I think, and I'm going to jump all the way to the end and make a summary comment, I believe she was desperate. I think her desperate nature led her to take some steps that shortcut. And I think that reveals a lack of trust in God doing it correctly. I believe that is something all of us are subject to. And as somebody said in the first hour, if you do not think mothers are pushing their daughters the way this is described all across our globe, you're not reading this right. I believe that mother-in-law was saying to daughter-in-law, let's not let true love wait, to use words that you would know. I'm not looking for a response yet, but I see that. I also see evidence that God honors what Naomi is crying for, but does not give it to Naomi the way Naomi thought she would get it. And the reason that comes is because of the nature and character of Ruth and Boaz. And that's where I want to turn now. What kind of man could stand up to this temptation? What kind of woman, desperate as she would be, in a strange place, her only guide is Naomi? Why wouldn't she have just thrown herself at him? She seems to have not taken the ultimate step. And he seems to have stood on the cliff and not jumped. And that borders on unbelievable. There is an implication of character on the part of Ruth and Boaz that lifts themselves way above. What was this time? This was the time of the judges. What was the character of that time? Everybody did just as they saw fit. I think that's what Naomi was doing. In desperation, yes. Understandable? Absolutely. Forgivable? I think God forgave it. But let me show you this. If you would look, please, at chapter 4, verse 13. I wanted to get to this in order, but it's appropriate to go to it now. Chapter 4, verse 13. All of this is over. Boaz takes Ruth as his wife. And when they came together, what does it say happened? It does not say she gave birth to a son. It does not say she was with child and gave birth to a son. What does it say? I think it's a crucial thing it says. The Lord enabled her to conceive, is the way mine says. How long had she been married in Moab? 6 or 7 years, maybe. No child. If Naomi had had her way, would there have been a child? Maybe not. God is acting through this. And I think that's the moment when you see Naomi forgiven, because God gives her what she needs, and Ruth what she needs, and Boaz what he needs, because he seems to, there's no hint of any other wife on the part of Boaz. This seems to be a, what is it Garrison Keillor calls them, Norwegian bachelor farmers, right? You haven't heard the term. This guy appears to be an older guy who's never been married. And love comes and finds him. And somehow the two of them rise above the more base instincts that we would have. And my picture, what I read, it looks like Naomi was pushing them together, hoping that that would take over, and then that would give her what she wanted. And I think God gave her much more, because by the time you get to chapter 4, verse 13, the land has been redeemed. Boaz has Ruth, and now Ruth has the land. Naomi and them have security in a way they wouldn't have had the other way. The dignity of Ruth is preserved. The integrity of Ruth is preserved. And so is Boaz. And looking at what happened, it looks like desperation was a motivation, a very understandable one. I think God would have condemned that motivation, but I think he honors the desperation. And I find in this something that says, when David was born, I think Ruth was still around. And I think a good part of who David was and how he behaved, which remember was so much at odds with his culture, God says, I found a man after my own heart. I think a good part of that is traced back to the story of Ruth and how Ruth behaved on this night and how Boaz behaved on this night, producing an integrity that I think was a part of that change. Now, have at it.
I agree with the desperation and all. I think I agree. If, I don't know what you're involved with at all, but I'm not sure I would go so far as to say that Naomi was pushing her. I think she was pushing her to hope this marriage outcome would come and that there would be this kinsman redeemer. But, you know, if you look at the story, what did happen is she goes through what Naomi told her to do, but it turned out that that you know he was honorable. He said, "Stay here," and she was honorable. And I wonder if Naomi thought this is exactly how it would turn out. And we'll never know, you know, what. And we do know that
we won't, but we can guess.
God's Spirit was here, and we do have a kinsman redeemer. And we see how it turns out. And I know you're gonna probably talk more about the idea of kinsman redeemer as a beautiful picture of what Christ is here. I guess when I read this, and again, like I said, it's hard to know what exactly happened. Because when you read this, I mean, I read it really close. I was thinking, golly, what is this girl up to? What's this guy up to? You know, what's going on about lifting up blankets and so forth and so on. But I actually do still wonder how much of this might have been cultural, that when you put yourself in this position, this man can now determine whether he is going to take you as his wife, and we are going to have that kinsman redeemer. And I don't doubt Naomi thought, listen, we're in desperation. We're just trying to eat. We need protection of what a man in this culture can do for us. Let's try and make it go on. Get yourself looking ready, smell good, get in there, and let's see how he responds. That's how I kind of look at it. But I don't know.
And I'll give you the last word on that. I don't know how to read that. I don't know how to read that. But I do want to go back to one more thing. He calls the guy who's in first place He calls him into a public setting. No longer are they in the dark. No longer are they. I think there might have been other people around, but there's this translation that says he went off to the side. I think he was off in a dark corner. I think if something had wanted to happen, it could have happened. He pulls it out of that. He goes into the daylight. He asks the guy, you've got the right of redemption, and I think it's time for you to exercise that or let your claim go. Which way is it going to be? What the guy say? You bet. I want to do that. Don't forget that. The guy's first response is, you bet. Yeah. Well, I think he certainly wanted the property, but what happens is it wouldn't be his property. If they had a child, it would belong to the child and belong back to that other family, right? Okay. What's the advantage for Boaz? Boaz doesn't have any children.
Secures his property.
Now, the property of two families might be combined in this thing. So Boaz has an advantage, and the guy says, okay, when I look at that, okay, and now there's a witness called for. Bottom of chapter 4, this is verse 10. Verse 9, Boaz said to the elders and all the people there, today you're witnesses that from Naomi I acquire everything that used to belong to it. It names the daddy and the two sons. And that I'm also acquiring Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, to be my wife and to perpetuate the dead man's name in his inheritance so that the dead man's name will not be lost among his brothers and at the gate of this town. Today you are witnesses to this. And all the people at the gate said,
we are witnesses.
Are you following along? The elders said, they said three things. What's the first thing they said? May the Lord make the woman about to enter your family like who? Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. And then they blessed Bethlehem because it came from part of that. Whoa. Who were Leah and Rachel? That's Jacob's story. What happened with Jacob? He married Rachel and woke up the next morning with Leah. And the daddy says, oops, sorry, you've got a wife. You want the one that you thought you were going to get? You got to work 7 more years. What an interesting thing for them to have said. May the woman somehow combine the characteristics of Leah and Rachel, desirable and productive and loyal. Leah, all the evidence was loyal and protective of Jacob. There was some rivalry that went on between the two of them as well, but as far as Jacob was concerned, Leah seemed to be a reasonable and a very good wife to him. May she be like the two of those together. What a strange thing to have said. Oh, but it doesn't end there. What about chapter 12, verse 12? What's the second thing that they say? And through the children the Lord will give you through this young woman. May your family be like the family of who?
Perez.
Whom Tamar bore to Judah. Remember that story? Judah had a son, married Tamar. Son dies, no children. He gives a second son to Tamar. That son dies. And I forget how many times this happened. He's got one son left. He says, I ain't risking that son on this woman.
And he was real young.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happens? Judah goes out to thresh barley at the threshing floor? Nope. He goes out to shear sheep, but they still have a celebration at the end of this time. And so he's eating well and he's drunk well and he decides it's time to party a little bit and he goes and looks for a prostitute and he finds one. The prostitute doesn't want any money. She just wants maybe his staff or his cloak or his seal, something that was identifiable with Judah. And he gives it to her for his night of partying. And then Tamar, who's had no husband, turns up pregnant. And they're ready to stone her. And she says, ask the guy whose cloak this is whether I've done right or wrong. And Judah says, she has done right, I have done wrong. What interesting things for the people at the gate to have said. Isn't this fascinating? You noticed that on the way by, right? When you read through this, you picked up on this, right?
We're still in that other part of the story.
Now listen, take your choice, of the family where Leah and Rachel were and how Jacob worked. Take your choice of Judah and Tamar, and now look at Ruth and Boaz. What do you see? You see two people, both of whom elevate themselves above all the stuff that's going on. And your admiration needs to move to a level that's just, as I say, bordering on unbelievable. They didn't fall off the cliff. They didn't fall into the swamp. Pick your metaphor. Somehow the two of them negotiated that tender and dangerous time in the middle of the night and came out with integrity intact. And that's, the Bible doesn't pull punches. It tells us the weaknesses and the foibles of these people because our own weaknesses and foibles are reflected in it. But what you see in this story, I think, is Naomi desperate, trying to move things to an outcome. And God backs off and says, no, what you have here are two people that I think can rise above that. And he lets it go up to the end. And then the two people pull
back. Maybe he gets credit for Ruth's choices and behavior, because when you think about where Ruth came from, her own culture, upbringing, life, Naomi, in that time that she had her as a daughter-in-law in Moab, must have taught her some powerful things about who this God of Israel is and what his expectations are for her to have made these choices and risen.
And it almost looks like Ruth understood that better than the teacher.
She probably
That's the piece I'm trying to see. It is clear that Naomi was a witness to the power and authenticity of God.
Yeah.
And Ruth didn't just buy it.
Yeah.
She began to embrace it. And live it. Yeah. And I more than anything, that the whole story here, I believe, is true love waits in spite of people trying to push it along. And I've been thinking about you as I've been doing all this stuff.
Yeah, you're not
cooperating very much.
The only common thing is Naomi, I think,
there is a maybe there. And I freely admit there is a maybe there.
Well, and wasn't Boaz the son of Rahab?
I meant to mention that. Yeah. This has wheels within wheels within wheels.
He's older, and he knows that if he gives in and he cares about Ruth, what people will say about her, because he grew up with a mother that probably encountered a lot of that.
I had completely forgotten to bring that in, and my notes tell me to bring that in.
That's a good point.
That's what happens when I start teaching without my notes. Boaz himself has come from a place, and I don't believe it's possible. I don't believe Naomi was trusting that, but I think that's what was there. That there's something special in Boaz. There's something special in Ruth. How did they get there? Especially for Ruth, I don't know. But coming out of that is an integrity, a faithfulness to God that lifts themselves above the whole of the landscape of Judges, where they are not doing just what they see fit. They are almost, seems like for the first time, they're doing what God calls them to. Deborah might be the other one that rises to that point out of the book of Judges, but we know less about her.
I think I have some new insight for true love waits now. But you know, really, that is an important point here. If you look at all the surroundings, and I had forgot that Rahab, his mother, had been a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy now who's standing up. I mean, you have to see the Spirit of God at work here. You know, just humanly, this thing could have gone off the bottom of the way. One other little, just a last little point. I said this story reminds me so much of the African culture that even in Botswana, in the villages, there are places, they call it the kokoa, where the elders actually sit in the afternoon. And anything that's an important thing that needs to be discussed about the community, the chief is there with his elders. And people come into there, and I mean, it's always things like whose cattle is this, or this man and this woman, or what. But they solve it right there. I mean, it's all aired out, and the, you know, at the end, it's almost like a sample kind of thing. It's a deal, and they have everybody in agreement They will stay there for hours until everybody says, this is the way it is. Do we all agree that Chief looks around? He gets that consensus, and it's going to, it's just to say that this story is so wrapped up in a culture that we probably know little about, but it is out there.
I think we can sense what that culture is saying, and I think it is an interesting difference from us, but I think we can appreciate it. At the end of the day, I walk away with an appreciation of Boaz and Ruth that is unbelievably high, and I want you to walk away with that same thing. And I had forgotten about
that. He also said that it was an example of the way Jesus is with us, and she went to his feet, just like that prostitute came to Jesus' feet,
yeah.
And she put perfume on his feet, and that perfume was
good. That's a good
observation. Although Naomi's instructions may appear forward, okay, the moral integrity of Naomi and Ruth is never in doubt.
Ruth, yes.
For the purpose of appealing to Boaz's kinsman obligation, Ruth's action were blessed for marriage.
Ruth, yes. Naomi. I have been ready to stop for about 4 minutes. I do. But what I recognize in her is the desperation in our world that makes mothers give their daughters away or push their daughters away. And there is an ugliness that has not gone away in 2,000 years. And there's pieces of this that are beginning to be looked at within our church, the sex trafficking and all that, that there's people who are beginning to be sensitive to this, and that is a right thing to be sensitive to. Let's have a brief word of prayer. Our Father, we thank you for people who can serve as examples, people that we understand so well because we understand from time to time what desperation is like, and other people that we aspire to emulate, people whose integrity holds in situations where it's almost impossible for it to have held. We thank you for giving us a glimpse into this person who is ancestor of both David and of Jesus. And we understand a little bit more about how you were providing for a heritage for your son to accept and adopt when he came to earth. We thank you for this time. We pray that you would bless our church and bless us in your service through this week to come. We ask all this in your son's name. Amen.